I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Join us on the website. Catch the archived shows. Catch the articles. Plug into my Facebook page. Follow me on Twitter. There are so many ways that we are trying to put together the tools needed to preserve liberty. Taking contemporary issues and turning them into constitutional training sessions. And what we need to do as a whole is understand the proper power distribution in our country. The proper power distribution between the states and the federal government, the role of the Constitution, and who is supposed to have what authority. Today we're going to be talking about H.R. 1599, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015. We're also going to be talking about another push for gun control. And, you know, this continuing ridiculous trend that we have as Americans to run to the courts to solve our every problem and decide our every issue. We haven't learned, I guess, that the Supreme Court is going to rule against the people because we have told them they issue rulings instead of opinions. And we keep running to them to be the rulers of our lives instead of being grown-ups who are going to make our own decisions and states who are going to make their own policies and regulations, instead of deferring to unconstitutional, undelegated power. See, that's what we have, again, it's the proper power balance here. And all of these issues hinge upon this understanding of proper power balance, something that we have completely lost sight of, and our representatives in Washington, D.C. have completely lost sight of or completely ignorant of. I had a discussion, a text discussion with my representative not too long ago over my representative is Congressman Ted Yoho. Just when I get hope that he's going to do the right thing and vote with the right crowd, he starts listening to the liars in the establishment again. And I just, oh my goodness, it just makes my head hit the stinking table. So I talked to him, and I've told him several times, look, Ted, if there's any doubt, if there is any question, look at Justin Amash. If you are not voting with Justin Amash, then you are voting wrong. And I don't understand this. I really, really don't understand the disconnect with who is right and who is wrong. The establishment, in their opinion and coercions, is wrong. And Justin Amash, 99.9% of the time, is right. And I don't understand it. You can't blame ignorance on that. Because if Justin has the facts and he knows constitutionally what needs to be done, then there is no excuse for anyone else, is there? The interesting thing is it's the Commerce Clause that has turned into this generalized language to bootstrap every single power desired by the federal government into their realm. works in conjunction, the Commerce Clause, the General Welfare Clause, the Necessary Proper Clause, the Tax and Spending Clause. All of these clauses are used to expand federal power. James Madison would have called it the use of forced construction in order to gain a power not delegated. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3. We're going to be talking about the Food Safety, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015 and what it really does, not what your congressman says it does. And then we're going to talk about the hypocrisy of that popular ideology of what this act does. We're going to talk about the current trend of the GOP to operate under forced coercion of its own members. You better go along or we will crucify you, and how all of that is working to limit the power of the people, limit the power of the states, to control our own trade, to control our guns, and eventually to control everything about us, because we are so unfortunately willing to throw everything under the view of the courts and everything under the purview of the federal government. We are doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Let me give you a little disclaimer, a little warning here today. You understand the principle of liberty first. Liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality, your favorite politician. I'm going to tell you what, this Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act has identified some people, once again, who do not know how to vote constitutionally, and some of them you really, really like. The question will be, will they take correction, or will they stand in your face, as my representative did, condescending and tell you how you're wrong and how voting against the Constitution with a forced construction of the Commerce Clause is right, because, after all, the establishment can't be wrong. We're going to learn about that today, so I hope that this will be a beneficial lesson for everyone. So let's start off with the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act. Well, no, let's take this back. Let's start with Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, the Commerce Clause. And this is a power that has been delegated to Congress to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with Indian tribes. Now, the Indian tribes in this current day, and even back then, were still considered foreign nations. You understand, Indian tribes are not part of the United States of America. They are little foreign countries within the states and within the United States. The interesting thing is that the Indian countries, they are countries, they're nations, are operating within the states under the permission of the states. And so we deal with Indian nations the same way we do with France, Spain, or Holland. You have to engage in treaties. You have to engage in negotiations and trade agreements, just like that. Even though they are on our soil, let me put that back. Even though they exist on this continent, they are not part of the United States of America. That was all part of an agreement. Now we need to understand the reason we have the Commerce Clause to begin with. We need to understand first that our Constitution, our current Constitution, was not our first attempt at a union. It's what we, the first attempt was the Articles of Confederation. The Articles of Confederation, our first attempt at a confederation, did not work, because we created a central government so small that it could not function. We had delegated power for it to do things, but it couldn't do the things that we asked it to do. They couldn't force the delegates to actually do their job and come to work. There was no motivation to come to job and to come to work and do their job. They could not enforce legally created treaties. According to the Articles of Confederation, there were certain parameters under which treaties are legal, just like in our Constitution. And when they made treaties legally, they could not enforce them because the states were not abiding. And when they made treaties, they were not, the federal government was not following an equal application of treaty agreements. For example, they were making, our central government was making treaties with foreign nations that would benefit one state and put all the cost burden on another. So, for example, New York would benefit from a trade agreement, and Virginia would have to foot the bill. Virginia would say, hey, that's not the way commerce is supposed to go. That is not how this is supposed to go. We did not join the Union to be taken advantage of by the other states, to foot the bill and literally fund the other states' prosperity. Our states, in these unequal agreements, were refusing to honor these treaties. We were on the verge of foreign war because we had a central government who had been delegated the power to make treaties. So the other foreign nations thought, hey, we're making legally binding treaties with this union, but their members are not following it. But the members are saying, look, these treaties are not under the proper parameters that a treaty representing a union must follow. And so we were on the verge of foreign war for breaking our treaty agreements. We were on the verge of civil war, fighting between the states because states were not wanting to welfare fund other states. And so we added the General Welfare Clause and the Commerce Clause to the new Constitution for specific purposes to compensate for the failings of our first attempt not to expand federal power.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So the Commerce Clause, the Necessary Proper Clause, the Taskmen Spending Clause, the General Welfare Clauses are clauses, Madison says, to describe the purpose of the power delegated, not to expand delegated power through forced construction. So the Commerce Clause is supposed to describe the purpose of our government's power to engage in treaties and to lay duties and taxes on foreign governments, and to also combine those principles with the Supremacy Clause. Remember, the Supremacy Clause also deals with treaties, which treaties must be made in compliance to the Constitution in order for them to be the supreme law of the land. So what we need to remember is no act by Congress that is made outside the Constitution of the United States is a valid, legally binding act. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 reads, to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states with Indian tribes and with Indian tribes. So, the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes can only fall within the delegated powers. Thomas Jefferson would say, there is no power in the power of treaties to expand the power of the federal government. So what we need to understand is that Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 must also operate consistently with Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2 of the Constitution. And Thomas Jefferson is going to explain to us what's that about. But first, let's go to the proper power placement. Because only powers delegated to the federal government are powers that they can exercise over. James Madison tells us in Federalist 45, the powers delegated by the Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. He says the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government will be exercised principally on external objects, foreign affairs, as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, with which the last power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. See, the taxation is to be connected with foreign affairs. Treaties are to be connected with foreign affairs. Commerce is to be connected with foreign affairs. Well, how do we then explain the text in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, among the several states? Well, you must interpret the among the several states to deal with issues regarding foreign treaties. You cannot allow a state to operate in a way that undermines these foreign treaties. Now, the interesting thing is, when you look at all of the discussions during the debates on this Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, they all surround two things: money and movement of product, taxes and movement of product. Remember, Madison says in 45, with which the last power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. The Commerce Clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, was not about governing the internal operations of the states and taking the prerogatives from the states on how they operate internally, but to deal with how to tax and collect taxes for foreign commerce and the movements of products for foreign commerce. When dealing with treaty issues, Jefferson says this: by the general power to make treaties, the Constitution must have intended to comprehend only those subjects which are usually regulated by treaties and cannot otherwise be regulated. It must have meant to accept out of these rights reserved to the states. For surely the President and Senate cannot do by treaty what the whole government is interdicted from doing anyway. The reserved powers of the states cannot be co-opted by any form of the federal government. Otherwise, then, they're not reserved. And you can't call it treaty, you can't call it commerce, because it's not a delegated power. It is a reserved to the states power.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So, powers delegated to the federal government are for foreign affairs, war, peace, foreign commerce, and foreign negotiations. The Commerce Clause, the General Welfare Clause, are supposed to fall in line with delegated powers. You can't get any clearer than this, than what Jefferson says, that you cannot allow these other clauses to expand the power of the federal government. You cannot include things and powers reserved to the states because those things were never delegated. Because then there is no limitation of government. As a matter of fact, Alexander Hamilton, your big government guy, says in Federalist 78, no legislative act contrary to the Constitution can be valid. The Constitution delegated certain enumerated powers. Commerce is not an enumerated power. Tax and spending is not an enumerated power. Those are descriptions of the purpose of the powers. They can lay taxes only for foreign affairs, only for their delegated powers. The interesting thing is that Madison warned us that if you allow the government to expand its power because of application of money, you will have an absolutely unlimited power to the federal government. James Madison says this, "This is not an indefinite government deriving its power from the general terms prefixed to the specific powers, but a limited government tied down to specific powers which explain and define the general terms." When you see general terms like commerce and welfare and tax and spend and necessary and proper, Madison was very simply explaining that these clauses were not meant to expand the power of the federal government beyond its specific limitations, but to describe the purpose of the power delegated within its strict confinement to those boundaries. But here we are. We now apply the Commerce Clause to expand everything. Madison says in the Federalist Papers number 42, that the regulation of commerce with these foreign nation, the power is there to restrain the foreign nations, not members of any state, and is not to violate or infringe the legislative right of any state within its own limits. And what are those limits for the state? Well, the Tenth Amendment says if the power is not specifically delegated, not through clauses, but through specific enumerations, then those powers, all those powers, are reserved to the states. Madison tells us in Federalist 45 that the powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined. Those that remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. The powers delegated to the federal government are for external objects, war, peace, negotiation, foreign commerce, and those which are to remain in the states, being numerous and definite, he says, will extend to all the objects which in the ordinary course of affairs concerns the lives, liberties, and properties of the people, and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state. So according to Hamilton, if you create an act that's contrary to the Constitution, it can't be valid. According to Jefferson, you cannot expand the power of the federal government by definition of treaties or commerce or agreement. You cannot do through the Congress by what treaty or agreement, what the whole government is interdicted from doing in any way. And that these powers being limited cannot be expanded by their own will. And then Madison gives us this very bold and strong warning in 1792. He said, if Congress can employ money indefinitely and are the sole and supreme judges of where they apply that money, using what? The General Welfare Clause, the Commerce Clause, the Tax and Spending Clause, the Necessary Proper Clauses. He says, they may take care of religion into their own hands. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, parish, and pay them out of their public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. They may assume the provisions for the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads, which, remember, we learned already that post roads were not the entire road system throughout the United States, but just simply the roads, the sections of roads that link state to state. So you could have free commerce amongst the states. This is, remember, the Commerce Clause, when you read the framers, is about taxation and it's about the movement of goods, physical movements, not the regulation of those goods so that they will move, but the physical movement of goods. We've got to learn to take this stuff into total context. instead of cherry-picking clauses and trying to make them match what we want them to do, like our Congress is doing. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. So we know now the Commerce Clause is not in a power over the states. The Commerce Clause is a description of the purpose of the general welfare, of the general operation of the federal government, to move foreign commerce amongst the states and not to regulate the states internally. And here's what my congressman says about this safe food. What is it called again? The Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015. He says it sets the federal standard on GMO labeling for interstate commerce. See how we pulled that in already? Internal labeling for interstate commerce. Madison says you can't do that. These clauses are not meant to restrict the internal order of the state. Those are things that were reserved to the states through the 10th Amendment. How can the 10th Amendment and the Commerce Clause contradict each other? How can any part of the Constitution contradict itself and still be a valid document? It can't. You have to interpret them within the proper context of each other. He says that's the reason, he says it sets a federal standard on GMO labeling for interstate commerce, so there are not 50 different standards or protocols. Interesting. Why doesn't that apply to everything? We have 50 different standards for lawyers to become lawyers. We have 50 different standards for doctors to be doctors. We have 50 different standards for veterinarians to be veterinarians. And in some cases, states aren't even required to, as a matter of fact, in all cases, states are not required to accept one law license or one medical license or one veterinarian license from state to state. When you think about it, we have 50 different standards for marriage as well. Now, if the Supreme Court has anything to do with that, we'll throw that under federal power as well. Think about throughout your day how many 50 different standards we have. Because the federal government is not supposed to make uniform standards within the states. Because the states are independent and sovereign. Remember what Justice Roberts said in the original Affordable Care Act decision, that it's the prerogative of the states to shuck off federal regulations when they don't want to accept them, and that states are independent sovereigns and they have to act like it. It's about time we do, don't we? He says, like pasteurization of milk, if each state set their own standard, there would not be clarity of what you or I decide is pasteurized. Well, we decide that kind of stuff all the time with food. We decide that all the time with herbs and with tea and all kinds of stuff. Are we going to start regulating? Oh, that's right. We have the Food Safety Modernization Act now that Congress passed that says we can regulate every bit of food. He said on an individual state with interstate commerce, that would be all right. However, when it comes to interstate commerce, there needs to be a referee according to the Commerce Clause of the Constitution. No. The federal government is not our referee. What an absolutely ridiculous statement. You know what that means? The federal government has power over us in every single authority. Do you know what that means? If the federal government has that kind of authority over us, even when we are operating things on our own, that means we are not independent and sovereign. We are just simply subjects of the federal government, referee. What a very nice way of stating that the federal government rules over the states. How kind and politically correct that is. Then he says that this does allow for a state to voluntarily label as a GMO as long as it meets and follows the federal guidelines. Wow. What kind of an allowance is that? You can label as long as it follows our dictate and our mandate. How convenient. It does not mandate labeling by the states, he says, but allows them to if they choose. Does it really? So a state can label something a GMO if they want to? If they find that the GMOs are what? Need to be labeled? No, they can't. They can't label if they want to. They can only label according to the federal government's regulations. Because within this SAFE Act, it actually says that there are some things that cannot be labeled as GMOs. Imagine that. Do you know one thing that can't be labeled as a GMO? Anything that the Secretary of the FDA decides is not to be labeled as a GMO. And the Secretary of the FDA can do that by arbitrary petition from the food manufacturer. How crazy is that? There's a section in this act that's called non-regulated genetically engineered plants. You can have a GMO who is non-regulated. How do you get non-regulated? Anytime the Secretary of Agriculture has approved a petition by the food manufacturing company for a determination that the GMO should not be regulated, who do you suppose is going to get their waivers for GMO regulation? The big lobbyist, big corporations, that's who. Which means now that your state cannot label anything a GMO, even if it is a GMO, if the Secretary of Agriculture determines that this company gets a waiver. My choice, don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Well, not only can the Secretary of Agriculture issue a waiver, but the law itself has a preemption. Section 113. Regardless of whether regulations have been promulgated under Section 112, beginning on the date of the enactment of this act, no state or political subdivision of a state may directly or indirectly establish under any authority or continue in effect as to any food in interstate commerce any requirement with respect to genetically engineered plants for use or application in food that is not identical to that issued by the FDA or the Department of Ag or whoever's making these regulations today or tomorrow or the next day. So in other words, our states are not independent and sovereign. They're completely under the realm of the federal ruling. And the irony of this is that the Commerce Clause was established, by the words of our framers ourselves, to encourage commerce between the states and foreign governments, not to stifle them. And that's exactly what this Safe Food Act does. Because guess what? The states are independent and sovereign. Robert said that if the states don't want to accept the federal regulations, they don't have to. And so the states will say, fine, you want to exempt Monsanto? We won't. We'll just label Monsanto as a GMO because that's what they are, a GMO. And that means we won't trade with other states. And we won't trade with other countries that require us to engage in your regulations. We won't do it. We'll keep things to ourselves. But you know what? Even more so. Because this is not an act that is constrained by the limitations of your delegated power. You were not delegated the power to tell us how to do our internal regulations. Every single framer on the planet said that. That means we're going to go ahead and trade with our neighboring states by our regulations and not by yours. And that's exactly how things should work with guns, too. Because guess what? our president is going to start regulating guns. He spoke to BBC last week, stressing his frustration over not being able to secure more gun control. He says that guns are a greater threat than terrorism. Guns are a greater threat. Senator Manchin told our people that they need to use the weight of government for better gun control. The force of government to govern gun control. To force gun control. It's about time our states wake up that they are independent and sovereign and they don't have to put up with this garbage. I want to ask you a very important question. If guns are so dangerous, then why do we keep arming our government? At what point will our government become dangerous with the guns that they possess? People aren't the danger, it's the guns. So why do we keep giving guns to our government? And they make our government dangerous. Well, that's absolutely the proper application of gun control. Our framers did have gun control in mind. Not gun control within the states and on the people, but gun control of government. Our framers believe that our government should never outarm the people. If you don't believe me, you need to go to my website and read an article called Second Amendment for Dummies and Tyrants. If you want to know how these FDA and Department of Ag regulations are completely tyrannical and out of control, then you need to go to my website and read an article on the regulation of industry. How federal regulations and government regulation of property is completely and totally tyrannical. See, what we don't realize is that when the FDA and the Department of Ag have these kinds of regulatory powers over our companies, then we don't own our companies. Do you realize that our Republican establishment believes what Obama says, you didn't build that? Because they don't believe you build that, they believe they can take it away from you whenever you disagree with their regulations. It's about time we become independent and sovereign. It's about time we understand what the Constitution means and understand that our Congress is not unlimited just because they come up with a convenient excuse to expand their power. Since Mr. Yoho has not responded to my text, I'm going to make a public invitation for him to contact me and have a real constitutional discussion with him and his errant staff member on this. Can you help me do that? He's my rep, and he won't talk to me. God bless. Get in our way.